This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast. This podcast was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. To support the production of content like this, donate at cbf.com.au.
But up first, as Victoria passes birth certificate reform, we hear speeches from a range of the different political parties. And we've got Mama Mish from Trans POV in the house to respond to some of the ridiculous stuff that was being said in Parliament. Mama Mish!
It was hard listening to some of it, to be honest. Mm. And over the past month or so, you know, since June, I've been, you know, involved in so many spaces for this. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, yeah, happy to break this down with you tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And so this will mean that we have to re-listen to some parts of it. Most of it's really affirming. There's actually some really lovely speeches that people gave throughout it, and the bits that aren't so lovely will be short, but we thought it was kind of important to give people an opportunity to respond, in particular someone from the trans community.
The Births, Deaths and Marriages Registration Act has successfully amended in Victoria to allow trans and gender diverse people to update the sex shown on their birth certificates without having to undergo surgery. After 2 weeks of parliamentary debate, we on The Informer wanted to walk you through some of the arguments that were made, and we've got Mama Mish from Trans POV to help us rebuke some of the more offensive arguments. Firstly, let's hear a couple of the speeches in favour. Labour, the Greens and a range of the crossbench supported the bill. Labour MP Jane Garrett explained that her support was in large part because of her religious faith, and she went on to discuss her own birth certificate story.
When we see and when we hear and when we act, it means we open our eyes, we open our ears, and by God, we open our hearts. And we treat people with the respect that we would want to be treated, with the respect that we want our children to be treated, and that we want our families to be treated. And to those religious people who have sent emails and who believe that God is on their side on this, well, I am a deeply religious person, and the God that I believe in is a God of compassion and understanding, the God that walks with people and that understands that lifting people up to enjoy the same rights as everybody else does not diminish anybody else. It does not attack anybody else's way of life. Quite the opposite. It makes us stronger. It makes us a better community. And by God, it makes the precious people who are brought into this world able to fulfill their dreams and aspirations like everybody has the right to do. It is not okay to not look people in the eye and make decisions about their future. It is not okay to go back to dusty manuscripts and old ways of doing things and not hear what people are saying and what people who are in this life, in experiencing these things, is that this matters, and it matters a lot. I'm going to tell my own birth certificate story. It's not nearly as dramatic or filled with the core questions of identity as those in the chamber are. But my birth certificate story is my parents named me Jane Furno Garrett. Thanks for the Furno, Mum and Dad. And they put a Y in my name on the birth certificate, J-A-Y-N-E, and then they promptly called me J-A-N-E for the rest of my life. The grief that I have had to go through because there was a Y on my name on my birth certificate. I've had passport applications rejected. I've had financial institutions require X amount of affidavit material. I even had to go on the eve of the birth of my third child and get a whole new blood test because my J-A-N-E was a different from J-A-Y-N-E on the Medicare card. So much so that this topic, I think, dominated my husband's 40th speech. For me, how much grief he'd gone through. And of course, that's just a name. But what the birth certificate, what I learned through all of that, is it's a fundamental document. If it doesn't reflect who you know you are, you cop it. You can't get a passport or it's delayed. You can't give birth to your child easily because you can't get your blood type sorted. And, you know, the mortgage documents might be a bit problematic. And I had to tell everybody my story over and over again. For whatever reason, my grandmother thought the Y and the name would be good, and Mum didn't want me in. By the end of it, you're absolutely gaga. And of course, that's not a fundamental question of my own identity. That's not who I am or who I was born to be. And all of that still caused me that much grief. For it to cause you beautiful people the kind of grief it causes when it's your very being, we just can't stand for that in a practical sense and in a moral sense.
Powerful words there from Jane Garrett. Mamish, she was talking there about religiosity, and you've paid very close attention to this debate. That's kind of a frame that I think conservatives have typically used. Like, how did you feel when, you know, that speech, like, obviously it's a very good, very passionate speech. But
it was probably one of the best that you heard. There was that passion in her voice. You know, she had taken the time to actually get to know the community, what was going through. When you listen to the nays, it just sounds like they never even sat down with anybody to have the conversation or engage. This is what, you know, my person's worried about. This is what my person's worried about. And everything people always talked about was the... for lack of a better way of putting it here on the spot, is like the fake news stuff.
Yeah.
The things that the Bill wasn't even worried about or covering, where she was so worried about, you know, what was right.
Yeah. And we will be hearing from some of those kind of fake news kinds of accusations as well. I kind of had a reflection during that. A lot of my legal... I hope no one's listening to this. Like, well, you know, I hope lots of people listening to this. I hope no one from wherever is listening to this. My name on my birth certificate is Tobias Halligan, but my name I've used for a whole bunch of things is Toby Halligan. So yeah. I might have committed... accidental fraud.
But a lot of people here tend to do that, I find. You go by another name. But see, the thing is, for me as well, this actually doesn't even affect me. Like, in my hometown where I come from, I can't change my birth certificate yet because of all this. Like, the law still doesn't change.
Yeah, right.
You know, but technically, according to every other piece of documentation I have, is female except for one document.
Yeah.
And all these things that the nays were saying that, oh, you know, worried about this and the safety of this and whatever. I've been going to the gym and using the gym for a number of years, despite... looking at me, you wouldn't believe. I've been going to, women's spaces for the past 6 years. I've been, you know, I'm invited and all that. It's great that she understands.
Yeah, absolutely. The next speech is from the leader of the Greens in Victoria, Samantha Ratnam.
It is such an important reform and a win for a community who've spent years and years battling for equality and continue to face far too many barriers in their fight for equal legal recognition. The Greens are also pleased that this bill removes the prerequisite of sex affirmation surgery before applying to change a birth certificate. Surgery is a major medical procedure and is expensive. And for many trans and gender diverse Victorians, sex affirmation surgery is something that they either cannot or do not want to do. Removing surgery as a prerequisite acknowledges that a person's gender identity is not always affirmed by their physical body. I would also like to take this opportunity to condemn the hurtful and false claims that have been made about this bill. The attempts to deny the reality of people's lived experience is extremely hurtful. The bigotry, transphobia, and hatred on display is incredibly distressing for the trans and gender diverse community and the broader community at large. I know that the debate on these reforms has been extremely painful to our trans and gender diverse community, and particularly distressing for young trans and gender diverse Victorians. But know that you're not alone. We're with you. And know also that those spewing hate have lost. And they know they've lost. Like all gains for human rights over the centuries, we are witnessing the last gasp of those who would deny such rights, which is why their rhetoric makes no sense and sounds so desperate. In a couple of days, if not hours, this bill will be law. Trans rights are human rights. To our trans and gender diverse community, the Greens see you. We hear you, and we will be by your side in the fight for equal treatment by the law. I urge all of us in this place to do the right thing and support this bill. Today, we move one step closer. And to all those who have had to endure this painful moment, his chamber times today. I'm sorry for the pain it's caused, and I hope as the days go by, as we move further from this win, that we will remember, what we will remember about the debate today are the voices of Ms. Shing, Mr. Medic, Ms. Stitt so far, and many more to come, your friends and allies and supporters who will always be by your side. I commend this bill to the House.
Here's another Labour MP, Harriet Shing, who reflected on her multicultural experiences.
My name is Harriet and my pronouns are she, her. One of the things that I take for granted is the fact that I know my name and everybody else knows my name, that I know my pronouns and everybody else knows my pronouns. And as I was growing up, one of the things that I was taught was that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words or indeed names can never hurt me. And that's something which is intended to, I imagine, get small children to stop squabbling. But in fact, as you grow up and as you learn about the power of words, it becomes clear, abundantly clear, that words do matter and that names do matter. And that words and names can break and do break so many people, too many people. And I stand here today for the second time in two terms of government to speak about a bill to provide a fundamental source of recognition and of dignity and of identity and of respect and of inclusion to trans and gender diverse Victorians. And I, like so many others, was utterly devastated when the bill failed by a single vote. There wasn't anything in it apart from one vote. And yet now, when we hear the opposition some 3 years later come back with red herrings, with arguments as to why we need further consultation, as to why we need a consensus-based approach, as to why we need a more conservative model, what I hear from that is not necessarily just what the opposition is saying, not necessarily what those hundreds, those thousands of emails and posts and messages received by all of us are saying, but why they are making the points that they make. Because what we see in this bill and in the opposition to this bill and to these progressive reforms that enable a severely excluded, harassed, victimised, discriminated, isolated, damaged, wounded and raw part of our population endure is the notion that ongoing discrimination is acceptable. And it's not. And it wasn't acceptable in 2016 and it's not acceptable now. And when we look to the origins of birth certificates, as Mr. O'Donoghue has done, and when we cast our minds back into the mists of time, we see that, in fact, I, as a cisgendered woman, should not be standing here in this parliament, that this is not a place where I should ever have belonged, that I should not have ever had access to an education in the first place, that I, as a mixed-race background woman, without the attachments of being a member of the landed gentry, should never find myself in a place as grand as this one, to be part of the legislative process. And times change. Times change since birth certificates were first designed and developed as a marker of nationality. Birth certificates are a key to unlocking the bureaucracy and the procedural messiness of documentary life as we know it. My birth certificate is also something that I take for granted. And I take it for granted in the same way that somebody who has never known a lack of privilege would only start to arc up when it disappeared or was compromised. I once took my birth certificate into a toilet, but that was only because I had my passport with me and I was seeking to have it renewed and needed to have it looked at for the purposes of that process. I didn't need to show it to anyone. I've never had to prove my identity in going to a sporting club, in going to a school. And what we see that this bill and its opposition seeks to achieve is that, in fact, trans people, gender diverse people don't, on the opposition's reading, fall into that class that George Orwell talked about as being some are equal and others are just not as equal. That's a bad paraphrasing. Please forgive me.
That was Labor MP Harriet Shing speaking in the Parliament this week in the debate over the birth certificate reforms that have passed just a couple of days ago.
You are listening to The Informer, and we are talking about the births, deaths and marriage legislation. The concerns of Conservative MPs tended to focus on potential risks they foresaw to women. Here's the Liberals' Louise Staley, the Victorian Shadow Treasurer.
Having empathy for individual trans people cannot blind us to the reality that not all trans women are either so well-intentioned, so mentally stable, or such upright citizens. The government does not want us to think about Evie Amati, Paula Denyer, or Jessica Yaniv. The Age reported on August 4th, 2019, that Ms. Amati is in jail where she is serving at least 4.5 years for a brutal axe attack she inflicted in a convenience store in Sydney's Inner West in 2017. She has also begun the process of detransitioning from jail. Wikipedia records Paula Denyer is an Australian serial killer currently serving 3 consecutive sentences of life imprisonment with a non-parole period of 30 years for the murders of 3 young women in Melbourne. In 1993, Denyer has claimed that feelings of gender dysmorphia are what led her to seek revenge against women by murdering them. In a letter from jail dated 4 February 2004, she wrote, "I committed these disgusting crimes not because I ever hated womankind, but because I have never felt that I was male." In the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal, Jessica Yaniv, a trans woman who has not undergone gender reassignment surgery, is suing over a dozen beauticians for refusing to wax her scrotum at their female-only salons. As observers of the case note, most of the waxers were poor immigrant women with no power. It is simply not good enough for government members to ignore the real and documented risks to women from allowing self-identification to be the only criteria for changing a birth certificate.
Those comments were by Liberal MP Louise Staley, who is the Victorian Shadow Treasurer. Mama Mish, some of those comments were quite shocking. How do you respond to those?
It's hard actually listening to some of it again. Because as a trans person, especially for a trans woman, sorry, I'm trying to gather my thoughts on this because it's really emotional hearing it. The problem is this is all very targeted at trans women. All right. This is an issue for the entire community. This is for the youth. This is for, the mature age. This is for, those in my age and, 40s as a parent, et cetera. Trans men, non-binary, everybody, this attacks all of us. This all attacks all of us, but these particular attacks are trans women. I mean, maybe you should start Googling up, female serial killers and start spouting out all of them and what they've done. You know what I mean? Like, it's finding those specific things of those people who have done something. They don't answer for our entire community, but it's just because there's one bad person, like yes. It was mentioned later, doesn't mean that that is everybody. Mm-hmm. And the thing is you can't change this stuff easily overnight. And when you listen to the other stuff said by Jane or listen to Samantha Ratnam and some of the others, they were right. I mean, if I said to everyone in this room, okay, in order for you to do X, you need to basically go and get your balls cut off, or you mm-hmm. need to go and have a hysterectomy, or you need to go and have all these things. If I said that to you, how would you respond?
That's none of your business. It's totally inappropriate.
Exactly. Mm. But the thing is, we're being told to be fully identified, you must go do these things.
Yep.
And that's not necessarily in my plan for myself as my life. Mm-hmm. That's nobody's business except the person that I'm sleeping with. Mm-hmm. And to be told you have to have forced sterilization for something just to be identified. Again, we're judged for what we are, not who we are.
Yeah. There is this fundamental tension as well in this debate that I think some of the people opposing these kinds of legislative changes are feminists who actively campaign saying that women must have control of their bodies, that that's a fundamental human right. And I would agree with them on those issues, but as part of these debates, when you demand that people are required to go through surgery, you are implicitly opposing that right being applied
it's hypocritical.
To trans people.
It's hypocritical at the end of the day. You know, or you can't judge me as a woman. It's none of your business and blah, blah, blah. But then you look at us and go, well, if you're going to come to my space, then you need to cut that off. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, they have more testosterone in their system than I do.
Yeah. And there's also a problem, I think, in a lot of these debates with these extreme examples where there's no... It's the correlation-causation question. Like, there may have been someone who happened to be a trans woman who committed, like, crimes, etc. Did their trans nature have anything to do with it? Like, that speech that Louise Staley kind of read out in terms of saying, see, this is how, you know, trans people think, that person was a serial killer.
Yeah.
We don't do this when it comes to... People don't walk up to heterosexual men and say, hey, I've got some real terrible comments that that Manson kind of wrote that I'm going to ask you about. You know, can we trust you to do this and that on the basis of that?
But I think it also, listening to some of that and Louise Staley bringing up, like, you know, trans people who have committed crimes as examples of, you know, why trans people in general shouldn't be trusted, it does speak to, again, the hypocrisy of a lot of the conservative arguments when, and this is comes more out of America, when, say, a white man, particularly a conservative white man, commits a crime. In America, there's been quite a few mass shootings this year and, you know, each consecutive year beforehand, where the trend is not acknowledged. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it comes to marginalized people, when it comes to, you know, trans people, the fingers are pointed at, you know, one or two individuals who have committed crimes, and then they are deemed as, you know, indicative of a trend that actually isn't there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The worst comment is things like, oh, so a minority group needs X, so why should we as the mainstream worry about the minority group? Like, these are the comments you'd see online from these sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at the stereotype of what it is to be transgender leading up until now, still even now in the stories we see in here, is around being a serial killer, someone from is a sex worker, someone who's in prison, someone who's a thief. So that we don't have positive images of, say, Mama Mish, who is a parent of two daughters, who's a professional, a radio show host, you know, all these things. We don't want to talk about these stories. We love the queer fascination of the sideshow freak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it means the debate that often is had amongst public officials can seem quite hollow. Though, as we've been hearing, many of the speeches, I think, felt quite heartfelt. It didn't just feel like, you know, a lot of the speakers who we played earlier had some quite genuine reflections. And it's worth saying as well that there was a substantial amount of pushback to the various positions that were being raised. This is Dr. Catherine Cumming. She's an independent MP for the Western Metropolitan area of Melbourne. She was part of Darren Hinch's Justice Party at one point. Here she is responding to a criticism that these reforms will allow prisoners in men's prisons to try to get their birth certificate change so they can be transferred to a women's prison.
I was voted in to this house on a ticket of looking after the most vulnerable in our community, and I do feel that the transgender community is one of our most vulnerable communities. Too much of the debate has focused upon a premise of fear, such as prisoners changing their identification from, for example, male to female, so they can transfer to a female prison, or people using single identification bathrooms or change rooms that does not reflect their presumed gender. In the real world, people are not required to provide evidence of their gender to enter a single public toilet or a gender space. Notwithstanding that it is considered extremely dangerous for prisoners to identify as trans or gender diverse and incarcerated in a prison that does not align with their gender identity. Corrections Victoria have a comprehensive policy regarding trans and gender diverse prisoners in Victoria. A prisoner changing their sex marker will not mean they get to automatically move to a prison of their choice. There is far more than that goes into a decision. I struggle hearing the debate today around somehow trying to mix family violence and this issue. It's disgraceful.
Absolutely, it's disgraceful. Just to emphasise again, the number for QLife is 1800 184 527. Mama Mish.
I'm going to say, you know, they make it sound like it's such an easy process to do this. I see parents who are struggling just to even get the first steps started in this conversation, even with their GP, with their psychiatrist, with just anyone in general. This is not something you decide, oh, just because I'm in a men's prison, I'm going to go to a women's prison because I'm transgender or try to get into a women's space. It's offensive to even think that this is hard. I'm telling you now, if you told me 6 years ago that I could have taken X pill and started this to get myself sorted, I probably would have taken it then. I mean, when I look at who I am now and what I do now, what I represent so much more for the community who I am now. But in the moment then, if you told me I could have made this go away, I would have. This is not easy. This is hell. When I go on a train and I go home, when I'm coming from the footy, I get spat on, I get laughed at. They point out the fact when I got my children there with me. This is not an easy life. You know, I'm happy. I feel better about myself and who I am. And it's taken me a long time to see that. But to suggest that this is something that you do on a whim just to do whatever is completely offensive.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And a number of the Conservative speakers definitely, when they were speaking on this bill, played into, I think, some incredibly problematic and offensive stereotypes about trans and gender diverse people. We're just going to play out a very short excerpt from one of the final speeches from, this is from Conservative, Bernie Finn.
Let me tell you that science tells us, and members opposite are very big on telling us what science tells us about a whole range of things. Science tells us there are two genders. There is male and there is female. There are two genders. Let me tell you, there are two genders. If Ms. Cumming thinks she's something else, well, good luck to her. I've got a fair idea of what Ms. Cumming is, but it's got nothing to do with her gender. But there are indeed two genders. And for this government to be pushing a social agenda which wants to set up 78 or 129 or 300 different genders is an attack on our society. In fact, that's what it is. If you want to quote science, well then you'll back that up. There are two genders. Now, of the two genders, of the male, there's homosexual inclination and various pedophilic inclinations, a whole range of inclinations, and we could go into that for quite some time. But in terms of gender, there are only two genders, male and female. Do you reckon would pass the pub
test?
Do you reckon, you know, if you walked into any...
I've been asked by Mama Mish to jump out of this. I think we've heard
enough. Look, to have the sentence in there talking about gender identities and pedophilia at the same time is, I think, right there was enough to cut his airtime alone.
Yeah, absolutely.
The idea that there's 170-something different gender identities is rubbish. You know, how we call and identify ourselves is no different than within the gay community. Oh, we're bears, we're otters, we're this, we're that.
Absolutely.
It's no different than whatever. You know, whether I'm gender diverse, whether I'm, you know, non-binary, whether I'm male to female, you know, those are the things we're looking at, not 170 different things. And obviously, we're not going to go and have a gender identity, whether it's, sorry, I'm trying to not call what the gender identity is,
It feels like what a lot of people who are kind of just mindlessly opposing things in this debate do is they project what they would do or what they feel about this thing. And the thing is, they don't feel that way about this thing.
No.
Like so someone like Bernie's like, there's only men or women because that's his emotional life. And okay, fair enough. But the inability to put yourself in the shoes of constituents and other Victorians, it's a really fundamental deficit in a politician.
It really is.
Like, it's a really, really big problem. I appreciate listening to a bunch of that was very, very hard, Mama Mish. So thank you very much for being patient with us. Any folks who are listening, don't worry, we have so much some good speeches coming up.
And again, you know, I'm probably one of the most resilient that's out there, and I struggled. And just to remind everyone that Lifeline 13 11 14, mm-hmm. Beyond Blue 1-300-224-7 or 636, and also Switchboard as well. Mm-hmm. Just make sure that if you need it, for, you know, those as well, let's just reach out to them. Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to add that I took 3 years of genetics in university, and never once did I hear that there were only two genders.
Yeah, yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah. That's Bernie's bad with the words and bad on the science as well. You are listening to The Informer.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.